I think our obsession with making members happy played a large role of the growth to a certain point. Our strategy is like, I don't even want you guys to think about it. I just want you to talk to someone on the phone, get them in for a trial, and then we'll deal with the issues later if they want to sign up. Now, how far could we take it? Could we try to reframe the level of simplicity that the fitness industry currently has a standard to? Can we push the envelope a little bit? Can we make it a little bit more complicated? Can we do a little bit more for the customers? Will they recognize it, notice it, appreciate it? And can we develop some level of attrition that somewhat hasn't been had to this point in the industry?
Am I in the shot at least?
Yeah.
Okay, that's all I really.
Oh, yeah. Hello, and welcome to this special episode of Gym World Worldwide, where we are going to give you the 20 best high-protein recipes to look like James Pratt here of Pratt Performance. I hope you are excited. This is our first foray into cooking. The whole gym business thing isn't going that well, so we want to pivot a little bit. We hear there's a lot of money in selling greens powders and protein, so we're going to give this a shot.
I mean, all the gurus are doing it on my feed. Everyone seems to be pivoting away from making lots of money, just making lots of shrimp for breakfast. So
if you have inflammation, if your gut health isn't good, we got a link in bio for our forthcoming supplement line. And if you need gym management software, buy Kilo, please, please.
We have this AI feature now with our Gym Lead Machine product. It'll teach you how to have shrimp for breakfast. It just says, dear GLM, what do I have for breakfast? And it just tells you shrimp. That's it.
We've been working really hard at that. 15 engineers full time, and we're glad to get that live. We're glad to get that out and to get the people using it. In all seriousness, we have Pratt, James Pratt of Pratt Performance, IRL, so you can actually see how big his arms are compared to me and Mateo.
Yeah.
Extra tight shirt today.
Yeah, he knew he was coming on the show, and he's like, "What time are we recording?" And I told him 1 p.m. And 2:59, he texts me. He's like, "No comments about biceps, please. You cut my workout short. I only had like, what was it, 6 bicep sets left before."
I had to switch from legs to arms right after your text.
Okay,
like, if I'm gonna be on TV.
Yeah. If I'm gonna be on cable,
we're gonna be doing protein recipes. So yeah, we're here in Austin, Texas, for the Business for Unicorns Unicorn Retreat. And
It's not called a summit. What is it called?
Well, yeah, what do you guys actually call this?
Oh, it's a retreat. Okay. Retreats.
So for people who didn't listen to the first episode, tell us a little bit about your gym. What you do?
Yeah, so we do small group personal training only. We have now 9 full-time trainers. And we run either a 3 or 4 trainer model every hour. Each trainer takes up to 8 fully customized programs.
And last time, Mark Fisher, who runs this group, described James Pratt as an absolute freak of nature, was the word that he used, because James does individualized programming for every single person. And then the other thing that makes your gym unique is that you're running like 7 small group training sessions at once, right?
Up to 4. 4 is our most, yeah.
Up to 4, so you'll have...
So 4 trainers taking up to 8, so we'll go 32 over 4 in a maxed out scenario.
Okay, so you have 32 people working out in a small group setting that's a large group.
Yep.
Okay, and do they start at the same time? So is it like 9, or is it like 9:05, 9:10, 9?
Yeah, we start at 5 a.m. We go 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 every morning, every evening, 4, 5, 6, 7 for adults. We have an athlete group 2. And they are actually starting this Monday. They are going to be our 4th group, our 4th zone, in all those adult times in the PM. So we'll have 1 athlete session going on during the 3 other adults.
How many bodies in total? How many members are we talking?
Total members is 650, 655.
How do you talk to everybody and make sure they're having a good time at the gym?
Yeah, I don't. Now, one of the growing pains was, for me personally, is that when I got out of training probably 2.5 years ago, is that I didn't know as many people.
Right.
And then once we started to clip like 500 members, I'm like, I've lost my touch. I come out on the floor. If there's 32 people, if I know 20, it's a good day. So we were past the days of I could just check the app, see the names, and process of elimination, determine who everybody was. Like, those days are over. So
they're all like the new interns, huge.
The other day, a lady was next to me, and I'm like, "Hey, what's going on?" Started a conversation with her. She's like, "Are you one of the trainers here?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm one of the trainers." And she's like, "Oh," she's like, "Oh, wait, I saw you on Instagram. You're the owner." And she's like, "I expected the owner to be way older than this." And I was like, "Well, how old did you think I am?" She goes, I'd say you're about 45. I'm like, oh, I'm 35. I'm 35. I was like, so you thought I was older than what you thought I was and which you thought was 10 years older than I actually am.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
so that must have made you feel really good.
Yeah.
So we talked to a lot of people who run the small group training model. It seems like the way most people do it is they want to get to 150 members at around like a $300 price point, around 50 to 60 on the top line and 30, 40% margin on the bottom line. How'd you screw this up? How'd you get to like 600, 700?
Yeah.
Because it seems like that's where like a lot of people stall, but you managed to get, what is that, 4 times the size? So instead of building 4 or 5 of these little gyms, which is what everybody we talk to is doing, you just smashed it all in one. Yeah. Like, what happened?
Yeah, I think going back to like 2016, 17 when we started, we grew so quickly organically. I know last time we were talking, we were saying like, we were getting so many testimonials and so many people were bringing their friends in and it was working so well. Like, we don't need marketing. I was that guy. Mm-hmm. He's like, man, idiots. Marketing, come on. Mm-hmm. We don't need to try to get people. Yeah, it just happens. But it worked that way for quite a while. I'd say probably when we were just above 300 members, I started to realize that like, in order to keep growing, we need a different strategy. So then that's when we started marketing more. But I guess like if I were to summarize it, it's just an obsession with customer satisfaction, as unsexy as that sounds. But the whole priority was keep everybody as happy as humanly possible, an overemphasis on customization and customer satisfaction. And I'm super lucky that we have a staff that is equally as obsessive as making that happen as possible.
But how do you actually do that? It's 600 individualized programs. Like, who's writing all this stuff? Yeah, how question. Are you keeping track of it? Who's in charge of making sure someone's still coming to class and doing the training? Like, how do you manage a client group that size?
Yeah, in regards to the operations, we have a girl, Sydney, who is our training manager. And then we have 3 programmers, her being one of them. And then the other 2, Colin and Jamie, they all have a metric of how many programs are going to write per week, how long it takes to write 1 program. And then as long as we're under that, which we always are, then we're good to go. But we have to devote 30 staff hours per week on writing programs.
Just writing programs.
So it's a full-time staff member, essentially, on just program design.
Which is why you're looking 45. You know?
Yeah.
That's why you got those 45-year-old eyes on you.
Yeah, I looked 27 2 years ago.
And part of it was, part of the thing that makes your story interesting and probably one of the reasons why you could grow is you sublease a space, right? Like you started working in this space that was for pro athletes and we showed in the last episode, it's like a warehouse. We'll probably do some editing magic and show a picture of it now. But it's pretty big, right? Like 20, 30,000 square foot space.
Yeah, so the whole space is 24. The field house that you see is 13. And then we have half of that for Pratt. The other half is for Test Sports Clubs, which is we now do for Test. I'm minorly involved in ownership of Test, but we do one-on-one, large group training, and then athlete training, more specifically combine.
Right, because we get some coaches listening to this show. You kind of came up, you started working for this guy out of college, right?
Yeah.
Or during college.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you started running the place, and then you saw this opportunity, and you pitched them, and they're like, it's a terrible idea. We don't want to do that. And you're like, can I do it on my own? And they're like, yes. And then I think they charge you some egregious rent to sublet space.
Yep.
And then it just kind of allowed you to grow because 13,000 square feet, you can train 600 athletes out of there.
Sure.
So. Yeah, if you are talking to, like, if there's a coach who's in a similar situation, you know, hardworking dude, showing success, maybe wants to run the business differently. Like, we had an episode a couple of weeks ago. It was like a partnership that didn't do well, ended up blowing up, and, you know, it was a different vision based off of the 2 owners. Like, how did you navigate that successfully, right? Because it sounds like most of the time when there's like conflicting vision, it just ends in
a war.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a strong separation between our roles where it was like, I'm going to do this for Pratt. And then I was not involved in Test at all from 2016 to the pandemic. Once the pandemic hit, I think there became a mutual interest of like, I'm intrigued by what we could do on the Test side of things if I get involved, especially from a management standpoint. And Kevin, my partner in Test, he's very good in like just the ownership portion of what we do. So I was like, I'll manage the staff. I'll create as best as possible a group of badasses that we like our product. And then we can potentially grow this business as much as possible, both Test and Pratt. And then I essentially get paid in equity of Test because they own the whole property and the building.
So they're shoveling a little more your way now. Is that the big update since we've been?
Yeah. But depending
on jobs then?
Do I personally do two jobs?
It sounds like, and you have tests. So you have two hats.
Yeah. It sounds like he does it like I have two jobs. Right. You know, it's kind of the same job.
But it's also two different jobs.
Yeah, I essentially try to look at it as just management of one entire staff in which, you know, we don't necessarily have a level of management between the trainers and myself on the test side, but we do on the Pratt side. So I'm able to kind of like prioritize my leadership group from the Pratt perspective, and I manage three people essentially. And on the test side, I do kind of more of a global management job for all their training staff and make sure our large group classes are good. We're doing a good job on the one-on-one training.
Sounds a little complicated. Yeah. It sounds like it's working.
Yeah,
so that's great.
It is. And to your question before, I would probably say to my former self or someone in a situation like me, prioritize making it less complicated. You know, because almost my my willingness to accept more complicatedness into the situation was probably a little bit of ego of saying like, I can handle all this, no big deal. And it's all gone well, but I think there were many stops along the way that worked to my benefit, in which I don't know if it would go that way again if we were to try to, you know, just redo this whole thing all over.
Speaking of simplicity, one thing that I've noticed in the short time we've known each other is you started to pick up the microphone and talk on the internet a little bit, to do a little social media, do stuff like this, where it seems like you didn't have as much of a presence before. We'll be talking to other BFU members. We'll be talking to Cassie Day, who's one of the favorites of the pod, and her whole thing is like this elaborate social media strategy. Sounds like you were able to grow to a multi-million dollar facility without being a guy. Obviously, your name was on the door, but you weren't an influencer, right? Yeah. Like it wasn't because you were famous on the internet, right? So as part of that simplicity, just kind of like ignoring, like how long were you just ignoring marketing? How far did that get you? Yeah. Like when did you know it was time to just like not be weird about training and not be that wasn't everything in the business, and you needed to get bodies in the door somehow?
Yeah, I guess ultimately, we were so over leveraged in training and operations that if you are in the 1% of doing that, then you'll get somewhere. I think if it comes to like training quality or just obsession with customer service, but at some point,
you mean like being a really good trainer is what you're saying.
We'll get you pretty far.
Yes.
But at a certain point,
100%, 100%. And I think there's probably a level to it that, that people have not seen yet in terms of like true obsession with like being a great trainer, and not just like, did you go to the most recent course? Like, are you really good with people? Mm-hmm. Do you put out a good product? Do they leave happy? Not like, did they do the perfect squat progression over the last 12 weeks? And I think our obsession with making members happy played a large role of the growth to a certain point. When growth started to slow down, we need to get more people in here and let's keep this whole referral thing going because that's been fantastic. But I heard Facebook is a good strategy to try to get people. So, you know, the whole hiring of a marketing team and then having them manage a marketing agency and then trying to get leads via Facebook, Google, and all that stuff, that's been helpful. But I will say it's probably been an accessory of our focus. We still are like heavy on referrals. We'll get 60 a month.
I wanted to ask about that because I know that was a newer thing last time we talked and still kind of is. So what is your online marketing strategy? What kind of offers are you getting people to entice them to come in to the gym?
We're pretty heavy on the anything we could do to get you in the door. So we essentially did 21 for 21 for a long time. Mm-hmm. We've done 30 days free, 21 days free, 14 days free, as low barrier of an offer as we could possibly get. And we do get some low quality leads because of that. And sales team has some frustrations associated with that. But I think ultimately we know like we're willing to deal with some of those issues to try to get more people in the door. And we feel like our product is our best salesperson. So if we can get you to try it out for a few weeks, then we feel like we're in a good place.
But what does it cost? It's pretty expensive, right?
Yeah, our cost per lead overall is probably a little bit north of 30 on average over the past year. Like some months it was up pretty high. Some months it was down in the mid 20s.
I'm saying, what does it cost to train at Pratt Performance?
Our unlimited option, we charge weekly like you guys. And we do 117 a week for unlimited sessions. And then our lowest offer is 64 for a single day.
Yeah, because low barrier offer, you don't see that a lot for something
for
where it's
more expensive.
Yeah,
For something that's pushing $500 a month.
Yeah. So it's an interesting qualification process. And like with the sales staff, the conversation we've had is like, one day we may have to change this. We may not be able to take on 80 trials in a month, especially if we know 25 of them are never going to sign up. But right now, our strategy is like, I don't even want you guys to think about it. I just want you to talk to someone on the phone, get them in for a trial, and then we'll deal with the issues later if they want to sign up, not they don't want to sign up, whether they've been hinted the price and they've balked at that. We'll figure all that out later. Right now, the goal is to just get people in to do the trial.
After you get someone signed up for low barrier, 14 days free maybe, what is your process for converting? Over the 14 days, how many touch points are they getting? What kind of conversations are you having? And then when are you actually getting the sign off for the actual 500 a month or whatever?
Yeah, so we would, after they come in for the trial, we follow up next day after their starting point session. And then we follow up days 4, 11, 17.
And then when you say follow up, is this like an automated text or is a coach calling
it's a coach,
them?
Yeah, it's a coach shooting the text.
Yeah.
Text or call, 1, 4, 11, 17. Day 17 is the close call. That's where we're trying to say, like, your trial's up in 4 days. We had a really good system around the 21 day. We had to maneuver it a little bit when we went 28, 30, 14. But the 21 day, we had a pretty solid system behind.
It's 30 to 45 for, like, giving your product away, 45 a lead. So you're paying, like, $40 a lead to give your product away for free. And how many of those do you need to get a trial, typically?
Yeah, so if we're trying to get right now 8 signups per month, that's our goal, then we probably need, we're shooting for about 10%. So we're trying to get up to 80 leads.
80 leads
per month on Facebook.
So it's about like $2,500 a month will get you another, what is that? $2,500 a month will get you 8 clients, which is at 400, 3,200 in recurring revenue. Is that how is it?
Yeah,
that what it works out to?
Yeah, our lifetime value, our average stay is 20 months.
Okay.
So if we can get members to stay for 20 months, then we'll make money on the on their overall lifetime value. We also kind of hedge our bet on the fact that, like, hopefully this person likes it enough, and we have an evergreen referral process that
they'll bring
more people in.
Well, that was the other thing. You said you get 60 referrals a month, so you're getting almost as many referrals as you are leads.
Yeah, yeah.
And so is there a built-in process for that, or is it just...
This is where we leverage the custom program heavily in that it's on a piece of paper. And then once you finish, you flip the sheet over and you write all of your suggestions for your next program, feedback on the prior. So we get some metrics in regards to the training process right there. We get some feedback on what they want their experience to be going forward. And then they're able to refer somebody for a free 30-day trial on the back of that sheet. And that's where we'll get 10 a week of those.
I feel like everybody uses the paper, like all the big monster small group training gyms. Like I think there's something to the, like, having the folder and the physical. Like, nobody that we've talked to who's running that model at like a large scale does it in an app, which is crazy.
Yeah. What's interesting is that it's like, we all kind of agree that the small group model is really good for ages 45 to 60 mm-hmm. and ages 45 to 60 aren't super tech savvy.
Yeah.
But we're all seemingly trying to move towards tech to an age demographic that doesn't love it, you know?
I mean, it will make sense eventually. Like, millennials are getting to be 40 years 100%. Old at this point, so your demographic will be that. But I also just want to reemphasize that part you just said. It's pretty amazing. If you're asking for feedback on the prior program, they're just like telling you what they want to order.
Exactly, 100%.
The next section. And exactly. It's like, oh man, it's the best training I've ever had. It's exactly what I want. Like, yeah, I know. You told me what you wanted, and I gave it to you.
Yeah. And over time, what we've, like, with how heavily we go into custom program, over time we've realized that we get to call our own shots, but not now.
Yeah.
But when you first start off, it's like, if a lady comes in and she's like, I want to focus on glutes, I don't want big arms, don't let me do a single arm exercise, I'm like, that doesn't abide by my philosophy.
Right.
But it abides by yours.
Yes. So and you'll sneak it in as time goes on. Right?
Exactly.
When they're ready.
Yeah.
when the third eye opens.
And that makes sense, because they're usually coming to you and saying, like, you know, at my old gym, you know, they had us doing burpees and I hurt my back or whatever. It's like, oh, great. We will never do
that.
Don't worry.
Exactly. 100%.
Yeah. So you're saying that's the advantage, because a lot of people we speak to do like 4 to 8 at a time, but it's the same program for everybody, but it's scaled. So if Teo's doing squats, I'm doing goblet squats, and you're doing front squats or whatever, but he could be doing bicep curls, I could be doing burpees, and you could be doing also bicep curls, probably.
Yeah, the plus one, minus one model I think is great. The how we go about it is that...
Sorry, what does that mean?
It's so if you customize the exercise for everybody, the customization that I think most small groups will sell is that we have a more progressed exercise and a regressed. This is our neutral selection. And then if you're not capable, we drop you one and then we plus you one. And what we've essentially done is we've made it like you have a 4-day routine and you're doing the next day on your program regardless of the days that you come. So we don't even have a... It's not even, we don't have a set template. We don't have a lower body day, upper body day, full body day. We don't have like a, on Friday we do our metabolic day. You literally do the next day, the next time you come in. So you're able to like legitimately follow a structured program the whole way through.
And how many trainers do you have?
Nine.
Coaches, what's the preferred nomenclature?
The preferred thing?
A coach or title. A trainer? What do you?
We just call them trainers. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So you got nine and... So let's say Teo comes in the morning one day, he comes in the evening one day. I'm assuming it's a different coach, right? And that's allowed. And so that coach just looks at the folder and knows exactly what to do, or how does that work?
Yeah,
managing all these different programs and different, like the logistics and just looking at 700 manila folders sounds pretty complicated. Like how does that work?
Yeah, so we used to, prior to this quarter, starting 2024, we used to have a trainer assistant. And this was somebody that was hired to pull all the sheets, distribute them appropriately, type the names on the television screen, pass the sheets to each trainer, and then get the station set up as best as possible for each custom program. We're maneuvering this quarter into our training coordinator being that person, plus the capability of coaching so we get an extra set of eyes on all the members. So we have five coaches now over top of four, and that training coordinator acts as a trainer assistant plus a coach.
That's pretty cool. So they're like getting weights and set up and helping people if they need a...
Yeah, that was my next question. Yeah. It's like, how do you set up six things at every, and just constantly...
You have a floater.
They must get so many steps in. It's insane. The intern must be huge too. This is incredible. The business is obviously firing on all cylinders. Looks like you're getting your beak wet in the other business now. How do you think about growth? Are you just going to grow Prep Performance to 1 million members? Or
No, we're looking at other facilities. We're working with Stu. He's been on the podcast. And we're looking at other spots to try to open up a micro gym. Something significantly more simplistic than what we're doing now. That's where we're probably going to run the 150 to 200 member play. We still want to leverage custom programming to some degree, but maybe not to the degree that we currently are. But I think that is our differentiator, in which we're willing to accept the complicatedness behind it for being a little bit better and different than other brands.
In New Jersey, or are you, what are you looking for?
Yeah, we're looking to do something within 30 minutes of where.
Shout out, like 80% of the podcast listens to it, like is from New Jersey or New York. Yeah. So what are you looking for? Maybe you'll find something. What do you need?
Yeah, we signed, and I don't know much about the process, so I've learned a lot in the last few months of working with Stu, but we had a letter of intent signed. And basically for me, that meant like, done deal. Let's go.
That is.
And then Stu's like, he's like, it didn't work out. It's like, what do you mean? He's like, oh, that's just what happens. It's like, okay, I got it. So I've learned a lot recently, but we're looking in the Summit area for a little bit. And then we're looking in North Jersey and signed a letter of intent in each of those places, but that didn't work out.
So. Is this to buy a gym or to buy a building to house a gym? What intent to what?
We're gonna rent, and we're looking for like 2,000 to 2,500 square feet.
Okay, so you're starting from scratch. You're not looking to buy something existing.
Yeah.
All right. And you're gonna do, is the idea to rubber stamp them like everybody else does, like building a big brand in the area?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. I think we could do the majority of our development of staff in-house at Martinsville, where we currently are. And then, we'll see to what degree we're confident in the sales and marketing process taking place from there too. And then maybe we just, hire three trainers, maybe four if we wanted to run a two trainer model and get crazy, and see how many of those we could start opening.
How do you hire? How do you find people? Especially as you're going to expand.
Yeah.
You're going to run out of staff in your current spot to fill up these new ones.
I love the medical field, the physical, the physical therapists and athletic trainers. We have four of those on staff. That we've hired athletic trainers that essentially weren't super happy with the amount of money that they were making, where we're able to kind of match that and maybe even exceed their pay coming out of college after they went to school for an excessive duration, and then have them come in and they love their job and they like the fitness part of it more so than maybe the rehab portion. So a little bit more fulfillment from a job standpoint. And then I like to think that we pay well. So we're somewhat attractive to that population.
Are you running like a, are you using a recruiter or something like that?
Yeah.
Or you,
we've used Stackhouse, and we hired a couple of people from Jesse, and then we've done Indeed as well on our own. We went through the whole, like, let's interview 40 people to try to find the one.
And then,
Yeah, but it's
always miserable.
It's very bad. Yeah, we did that. We didn't have Jesse back when we were doing it. So
in our day,
back in our day. I've heard your stories. I haven't had it that bad to this point, but yeah, it's been tough to find high quality trainers. You know, I think most of the people that maybe were interested in becoming a training professional have decided to go elsewhere into a different industry because they're going to make more money.
I have a follow up because we had Mike Baranis on. Actually, his episode's about to come out.
It's out. You should follow your own. And on that note, like and subscribe to the podcast, Tail and Listener.
Yes.
And then you'll know when the new podcast come out.
He didn't bring this up in our episode, but I've heard him talk about it before, about finding talent. And he's actually a pretty big proponent of not finding fitness people because it's harder to break them out of their own. They all have their own, you know, philosophies and like beliefs about training. They're very passionate about certain methodology, PRI, whatever it is.
Yep.
And so he'd rather just find a bartender or someone who's really good at service because you can teach someone how to coach. But if, as you said earlier today, you have to be a people person. You have to like be really good at customer service. So have you run into that friction when you are finding people who are fitness and like kinesiology is like their education background? Have you come up against like some of that when you're trying to say, well, this is how we train?
Yeah. The, I wouldn't say I've found a tremendous, advantage to either thought process from leveraging the really good trainer and trying to make them personable or vice versa.
Right.
I have examples of people that we've taken on through our internship process. I'm like, this is the personality we need.
Mm-hmm.
And we just were not able to get them competent from a training standpoint at all.
Interesting.
And I think our members probably have a expectation from a training standpoint that is more challenging to match than your average gym. So I think that doesn't work tremendous in our model, but will for most. Like I could see this trainer, this intern doing very well in many models, but probably not ours. On the flip, we've had plenty of really good trainers more recently, a situation, really good intern, awesome trainer, could not hit it off with our population of people at all. And like, we'll have the documents associated with like, if you want to hit it off with people, like this is how we can best systematize you being the perfect personable robot to
people.
This
is how you say hi.
Yes.
ask how to make friends.
Yeah. Ask these questions. Smile. Yeah. Be it like, do you actually like people?
Right.
Like,
no.
Yeah. And then the other thing from the training side, it's like, this is how you can train people. Like say these things and you're probably good 95% of the time. And that's, it's been challenging on both ends sometimes. But yeah, I can't say I've had a strong experience on either side of saying that we really need to leverage good trainers or we really need to leverage great personalities.
So it seems like you have a good thing going. Like why screw it up by opening a bunch of other gyms?
Yeah. Especially something that's going to be slightly different.
Like you got two big gyms business, like two big gym businesses in the same space. You drive your car to the same spot. All the staff is there. It looks like it's making a bunch of money. Like, you know, why not just keep growing, doing what you're doing?
Yeah. Well, spoiler alert, I don't drive my car to work because I live a quarter mile away.
So wow. Yeah. Now it's just
now you all
the prospect is even worse. Now he's got to buy a car.
Yeah. I've had my car for 6 years. It's got 24,000 miles on it.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to see the capability of what we're doing. Like, I'm inspired by a lot of the people that are doing really good. Like Rick's a great example of watching what he's doing. I'm like, with what we are doing, it's definitely a little bit too much to expect that level of scalability. But how far could we take it? Could we try to reframe the level of simplicity that the fitness industry currently has a standard to? You know, can we push the envelope a little bit? Can we make it a little bit more complicated? Can we do a little bit more for the customers? And will they recognize it, notice it, appreciate it? And can we develop some level of attrition that somewhat hasn't been had to this point in the industry, you know? And I think going back to the customers, it's like there's a lot of people who have tried fitness and a lot of people have had very bad experiences. Mm-hmm. And you know, could we be the answer for all people everywhere? You know, it's a fun and exciting journey that I would not be surprised if we mess it up many times, but I think we'll end up stumbling across something pretty good.
Maybe it's our fault. We just keep interviewing gym owners, doing 150 members, charging some like high ticket, semi-private.
Yeah. Just, we're crafting the industry. Yeah. Just we're shaping a million like tiny small group
James
training.
James has just watched too many episodes. Like, I have to open a small one.
I just need eight small gyms around me.
Maybe we should stop.
Because I see the edge of Pratt, right? It's this big gym, big field house, unique space, unique training method. It's probably got crazy energy with that many people going on all the time. Like, that seems like pretty clear. But then I look at, like, especially the area you're in, there's just so many good gyms there. There's so many good gym owners, so many people doing that model. Like, what's the edge? The edge is just going to be, you're going to just outwork them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just going to murder them sleeping. Thinking plus one, minus one. Like,
I guess the big question is, like I was saying before, it's like, how do we make this more systematic and more simple without reducing the special effects that we currently have, you know? And I don't know exactly what the answer is right now, but I think there is something to the, when you do work hard, people recognize it. And I think there's a level of appreciation for the obvious work that we put into each individual member, despite the amount of overall members that we have. So when they receive a 60 to 90 second video of their program before they get to it, like, there's just a little hint of, like, we care, probably more than most people that you've experienced at this point. And how far can we keep that going? Yeah, I don't know, but I'm willing to find out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, why not just do it in a place that's not New Jersey, where there's just, like, not a bunch of these gyms that are good?
Yeah, it's a good point.
You know, just come on down to Florida, New Jersey South. There's plenty of space.
You know, Jersey Shore year round.
Yeah, exactly.
I have one more. This is not related to what we've been talking about, but I'm thinking about Mike's episode we just did, and he does a lot of events. How do you do community events for the gym with 600 people?
Yeah, it sucks. Yeah.
Do you do them? Maybe you just opt out.
No, we just had awards night in January.
Yeah. How do you do awards night?
Yeah.
How do you do member of the month?
Yeah, it was brutal. So
we have a team of three people.
It's going back to 30 hours
a week on awards.
Going back to Sydney, Psycho Sid loves event planning, and she does a great job of getting most of that set up. And again, a couple of the staff members we have, they're oddly obsessive about customer satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So they're putting this thing together with a smile on their face the whole time, you know? So I'm fortunate to have people like that. Awards night in and of itself, it's like we have to meet. They have to meet for for a half hour to an hour a week for probably 4 to 6 weeks.
For a year.
Every year. And we just finished the planning for 2035.
Yep.
But cornhole, we have a cornhole tournament every year. And went to go off site with it. We were trying to go off site. And I was like, you know, if we could spend $15,000 or less, that would be great. And the guy quoted us, like, $27,000. It's like the lowest you're going to spend. I'm like, fuck it. We're in the parking lot.
For cornhole?
Yeah.
I can do it for 15.
Yeah.
I can get it done for 15.
They have a pool. They said they have food. So we were trying to be nice.
Mine's not, but I can get it done for 15.
Yeah. I can fill a tub with water.
But yeah, that's definitely been challenging.
All right. We got to cut it a little short because, you know, you have business to get done. You have business
at the retreat.
But guys, if you like this, let us know in the comments. We'll get James back on. Maybe when Mateo and I are in the Northeast, we'll do a tour of Pratt Performance and see some of those little extras. We'll see how he makes the 60 to 90 second videos every time before you come into the gym. Give you a little alpha there. James, now that you are a social media personality, where do people go to find you?
Pratt53, Instagram handle. And Pratt Personal Training is the business one. So check that one out. We do a much better job on that versus my own.
I enjoy it. I follow both. So thanks for making the time, and we'll see you out there.
You got it. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.